Hello, this is Dr. Stephen Nurse, and this is my third and final series on the war in Vietnam, titled, A Letter is a Living Voice. We will be reading letters and documented accounts written by Vietnam veterans. These letters show all the emotion of war, from fear to anger to love and fellowship. These are only the opinions of the writers of the documents and not those of the voice of Vashon or the readers. In addition, while some of the language in the documents may appear to be racially insensitive, it is the actual language of war. It is my opinion that to use the exact language to give the listener a true understanding of the veterans' ratings and their associated emotions is extremely important. In war, we demonize our enemy through our language and our pictures. We make them inanimate, therefore easier to kill. Hello, this is Steve Nurse, and this is the voice of Vashon. And this is our series, third series, actually, on Vietnam. And as we mentioned before, we are doing both letters, and we are also looking at the issue of healing and veterans coming back to Vietnam. And as a result of that, I talked to my very good friend, Dave Kistler, and he said, you've got to talk to this woman. Her name is Sue Warner Bean, and she was with an organization called Peace Tree. First, I thought it was Peach Tree. I wasn't sure what was going on there. But anyhow, that's who we are interviewing today. And so, so why don't you just give me a little background on yourself? We know you through the Presbyterian Church, and that's how David knows you. And you mentioned that you worked for Alaska Airlines for quite a while. And so just give me a little background of kind of how you got involved in this organization. Now I can't even say it right. Peace Tree.
Peace Tree's Vietnam.
Yes, okay.
Sure. And see, thank you so much for inviting me to have this conversation with you today and to talk about Peace Trees and to talk about the experience of healing with Vietnam. And here we go. My background, born and raised in the Seattle area, proud Husky, University of Washington graduate.
Go Dogs.
And, go Dogs. And graduating with a degree in Russian literature and language didn't open up a lot of doors at the time I graduated way back when. And so I took that short-term job at an airline and really never left the industry after that. I was 20 years with Horizon Air and Alaska Airlines. Wrapped up my tenure there as emergency response director. And then since 2005, I've continued to do the same kind of work, but on a consultancy basis. And so I work with airlines, airports, passenger rail, and other businesses to develop their emergency response plans. And really my specific area of interest is what do you do to respond to and assist those directly affected if you have a casualty or a mass casualty event. And so I mentioned that because that really does kind of tie in with being a Gold Star family member and having had my brother killed in Vietnam in 1968. I think those things are linked. Happily married, live in Normand Park, and have the two best cats in the world. And I think that's about it.
Well, that sounds good. And I think that one of the things about the voice of Vashon out here on the island is one of the reasons it was really started was not necessarily to deal with mass casualty events, but certainly because we are kind of isolated how do we deal with responses like earthquakes and loss of power and who knows what else. At one time, Vashon was was a large Nike site out here where there were nuclear missiles in the grounds out here and ready for the Cold War. So a lot of people don't know that through the whole middle of the island.
Yeah, I have to know, my husband's grandparents were long-time Vashon Island residents up at Cedarhurst Cove, so it's got a very warm spot in our family's memory, and you live in a gorgeous part of the world.
Well, we do, and we've kind of been talking to some of the veterans. We've been talking to some of the veterans who, of course, were there in Vietnam and have gone back to visit. But and tell me about Peace Tree. What is Peace Tree? What is your purpose? What is your what are your goals?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'd actually love to just read you what our mission is because I think it captures it perfectly. Peace Tree's mission is to address the legacy of war by removing dangerous explosives, returning the land to safe use, promoting peace, and cultivating a brighter future for the children and families of Vietnam. So that's our mission. And I should say, I'm not a staff member with Peace Trees. I've had a long time association with the organization. First became involved in 2004, so nearly 20 years. And I do serve on the board. But I come to you as a very dedicated and passionate volunteer rather than as an employee of Peace Trees. But the work that we do is focused on a few things. First, safety. And so we are an organization that through State Department funding, we have a team of about 200 Vietnamese D-miners in Quang Tri Province and Quang Binh Province, which is that's central Vietnam. It's the northernmost province of South Vietnam and the southernmost province of North Vietnam, so straddling the demilitarized zone. So we have a team of comprising about 200 D-miners, and they are trained to international standards. They are clearing unexploded ordnance and delivering mine risk education to help ensure that people are not injured or killed by the ordnance that still remains there from the war. So we do that. We do citizen diplomacy work. We've had over 1,500 citizen diplomats go on trips since we were founded in 1996. And that's to foster relationship and to foster mutual trust. And it's really, in some ways, the heartbeat of our work, those relationships. And then additionally, we do community-led economic and social development. And that takes the form of kindergartens. We've built now over 24, or I think we just finished our 24th kindergarten, 12 libraries. We provide scholarships for students. We've done some microcredit lending and some other development work there, but very much in partnership with the people of those provinces. So that's who we are and the work we do.
Well, I know that my friend, his name is Dave Watson, and he was in the military. He lives actually in Ho Chi Minh City right now. And I ask him about kind of the infrastructure today in Ho Chi Minh City and things, and what are the problems in Vietnam. And the one thing that he said was they're having difficulties with is one of the things that you're talking about is the demining, that there are literally hundreds of thousands of unexploded mines, bouncing Bettys, all kinds, and kids are running around and still stepping on these items. I guess item is pretty nebulous word for it, but. Still recurring birth defects and things from Agent Orange are major issues. So,
yeah.
Tell me about the D-miners. Do they go out in teams? They must have some way of checking different areas. Is it land and sea and everything, or just give me a little background on that?
I would love to. It's a few things, and to speak to your friend's point, in Quang Tri Province, which is again, it was the northernmost province of South Vietnam, and that's over the last 27 years, where Peace Trees has focused the bulk of our efforts. We've just recently expanded to the neighboring province. So in Quang Tri Province, which is about the size of King County, there were 600 pounds of ordnance dropped or placed per square meter. 600 pounds per square meter.
Wow.
Of ordnance. And of those, 10 to 30% didn't explode. And many are still volatile. So that's the scale of the problem that we're working to address. And as you say, I mean, there's a big risk for children. Something like cluster munitions, which are, frankly, they're banned now. They're designed to hit soft targets, if you will. I mean, they're designed to hurt and kill people, not structures.
The cluster,
and those look like little. They look like tennis balls, right? I mean, they're small. They're round. They look like something a kid would pick up. So. And the things that we're clearing there range from those to 500-pound bombs. I mean, it's the full scale of things. So the way the teams work, there are several demining organizations that work in Quang Tri, and we share data among the organizations. Also work with Department of State to get records of, you know, where the bombing runs were and where the places are that are most likely to have the highest concentration. And we also look at which are the areas that are most have the most impact on people. I mean, there are parts of Quang Tri where you really can't, that are inaccessible. We're less worried about those. We're worried about where people live, where people work, where people go to school, where communities are. So that's the focal point, is where can we have the greatest impact. And so there are teams that map. There are teams that focus on battle area clearance. There are teams that do spot checks. So one of the really important pieces of our work then is mine risk education. So our teams will help people know, help the local community know, help school children know, what does ordnance look like? If you see something, what is it going to be? You know, do you know if it's dangerous? What is it? What does that look like? They'll go out with models of things and cards and explanations of things to help children, communities understand what that ordinance looks like. Because there's not high awareness, right? The war ended about 50 years ago. So first, educate them, and then they can call if they see something that they think may be unexploded ordnance. They can pick up the phone and they can call basically a hotline.
Almost like a 911 or something.
Exactly. And so our team can go out and take a look at the item, identify whether it's volatile, either cache it for later destruction, destroy it in situ, could be either. I had the chance to go, I was in Vietnam in January, I'm going again in May, and had the chance to go out and get briefed by one of the battle area clearance teams, I think that's what they call them, battle area clearance teams, that's out sweeping an area that's known to have ordnance, and they have metal detectors that are calibrated every day, and they do an initial sweep, and then they go out and identify the areas to hone in on them, dig down, brush the dust off, brush the dirt off around these items, and assess them. Again, they're either destroyed in situ, which is what we watched happen with a couple of cluster munitions when I was there in January, or they're removed, cached, and detonated in a safe place later in groups.
And I've seen the cluster bombs. I had a friend who flew C-130s, and they would drop the cluster bombs out of those, essentially take the bomb on a skid and throw a couple parachutes out, and that would essentially pull the the bomb off of a chute, and they were the cluster bombs were also made to explode above ground, not go into the ground and explode, but to explode above ground. So essentially, if they were even clearing a landing zone, it could destroy pretty much everything from 6 inches up for yards and yards. And of course, like you're saying, if those had the large bomb had literally hundreds, I don't know if thousands is too much, but of these little cluster units, like you said, about the size of a tennis ball, and if you say 30% of them were unexploded, that means there are still lots of ordnance.
And they detonate, as I understand, it takes a certain number of revolutions of that cluster munition before it to trigger it. And so if they haven't gone that number of revolutions, it hasn't, and that's why they're still volatile, right? I mean, you could pick it up and it could be that last click. So they're particularly dangerous for kids. I mean, people see a 500-pound bomb, they know what that is, but you see something that looks like an old black tennis ball, and you don't.
Yes. Right now, as we're speaking, Sue, my friend Mike Dorsey is in the studio, and he showed me a picture of a display just now on his laptop of a cluster bomb, and that's really what it looks like, is, like you say, about the size of tennis balls, and literally hundreds and hundreds of these things. Got to be pretty scary. Are they all metal so that they will show up on... I know some of the ordnance was like claymores and things certainly had metal in them, but they also had, you know, they were also almost like a plaster or plastic on the outside. Do they all show up with the metal detectors?
I believe they do, and now you're getting to a level of technical expertise that is beyond my lane. But
I went to the well one too many times.
but I'll tell you, I mean, I do know that the soil itself has a lot of a high metal content, and so the calibration is pretty sensitive that they do. It was really interesting watching this, to be able to dial it in where they can identify the ordnance versus just the soil is metallic, and a lot of precision. Our teams are trained to International Mine Action Standards to be able to do this work. And I love that it's all Vietnamese teams. And one of the things I'm most excited about is that we got to meet the all-women demining team. It's traditionally been a very male-dominated field, as you might imagine. And yet it's a real opportunity, a real professional opportunity for women. And so Peace Trees has been actively working to get more women involved in this work. And we are the first ones in Vietnam to have an all-women demining team. And they are just fierce. It was great to meet them.
Well, that's pretty amazing. I think that, you know, I've seen other... I think it's the movie called Hurt Locker, where that has to do with finding IUDs or not IUDs, IEDs.
That's better.
Yeah. I don't know what the other one with you could do that with a metal detector or not, but finding the those bombs and destroying them and. I think when you just talk about just I think they said there were more bombs dropped in Vietnam than there were during World War II, and certainly much more sophisticated. Well, I guess you want to call a bomb sophisticated, but much more effective at destroying things and killing people. And I think, you know, we sometimes don't realize that the humans that are involved in all these things are the teams that go out, these do they run into problems? Are they pretty safe? Do they have the system down pretty well so that they're not getting injured themselves?
I am really proud to say that since 1996, we have never had an accident with our teams.
Wow.
Not one.
Wow.
So yes, very safe, just exceptional professionals doing the work that they do.
And
I'm really, really proud of them.
And, you know, the amazing thing is to me is that I know that in Vietnam, certainly, it's a very humid climate. It's things grow fast and grow all the time. And I would imagine that in most cases, when they're out looking for these things, they're at least buried under vegetable material or something. They're not just like, it's not like an Easter egg hunt, you know.
That's true. Actually, and it's interesting you mentioned that because we've also added foliage clearance teams. And so they'll go in. Yes, they do have metal detectors. They're safe. They're able to work through safely to clear the vegetation. And so that the removal teams can then go in and access things more easily. And the things that we saw when I was there in January, the couple of cluster munitions they'd identified were, I want to say, 12 inches down, maybe 12 to 14 mm-hmm. inches below the surface.
Wow.
When they do, yeah.
You've got to have pretty sophisticated material to do that. This is not mm-hmm. like, Richard Nixon walking on the beach with his metal detector in Santa Barbara. A little more detailed than that. And
a little bit more.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And so you meet with the teams, too, and you get to meet these people. They are dedicated people, I guess, is probably a pretty good way to... Are they paid by the government or are they paid by your organization to do this? Are they volunteers?
Oh, they're not volunteers. This is their full-time work.
Okay.
And our I think we have about 200 team members right now, demining team members. And they are funded through State Department grants. Two-thirds, three-quarters of Peace Tree's funding, our budget, comes from grants that we receive through the Office of Weapons Removal and Abatement, which is part of the Department of State.
Wow.
So, and then the remaining 25% is through individual donations, foundation donations, other grants.
Princess Diana was really involved in this in England, years ago. The whole thing of getting into war zones and getting rid of the ordnance. And I've been back to D.C. many times, and if you go through the UN building, they have some displays on unexploded ordnance. And also, there's a pretty dramatic display of prosthesis from kids and adults that have lost limbs as a result of this ordnance, or of these bombs. I wonder if, I noticed there must have been, I don't notice, but I'm saying, I have a friend also that found, they were along the Mekong and found mortars, all kinds of unexploded things in the waters and on the shores. Is that something that's, are they looking at those areas too?
That is not our specific area of focus. With Quang Tri province, there are rivers. And yes, things are uncovered when they do, say, dredging in the river or construction along the riverside, or when there are floods or landslides as a result of typhoons, which we're seeing with more frequency now and more severity due to climate change.
Okay.
And so we don't specifically say we're going to do demining in the river, but we do respond to things that are uncovered.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, so it's not a necessarily a focus, but if you find something out there, they take care of it, I guess is the best way to to put that. Yeah. And and how many people are on one of these teams that would go out?
I think it's 20 are on our battle area. Our battle area clearance teams have, I want to say, 2016 or 20. I'm not sure how many we send out with the SWAT teams. That's a great question. You know, a smaller group, if they're going out specifically to remove an individual piece of ordnance or a small, clear a small area that's been called in. But I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah. You know, it's, it is fascinating because I just read an article here not too long ago that, you know, of course, London was bombed by the Germans, you know, in World War II. And they just recently found a, you know, 500-pound bomb that was in the basement of some building, and it was still, you know, still could be exploded. So this is not stuff that just goes away.
No, it doesn't have a shelf life, right? It's it's there. It may be volatile, and until it's removed, it poses a threat.
Or it has a shelf life of a Twinkie, which is probably right. About
Twinkies and cockroaches, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
both have a pretty long shelf life. And so I would imagine your teams are pretty well appreciated by the local communities.
They are, and I really love the fact that they engage with the community. I mentioned the mine risk education and how important that is, and that's certainly part of relationship with the community as well.
And are they finding? I was just going to say, are they, with the mine risk population, are they still finding? Are there a lot of people calling in with these things, and that they're still finding these things out there pretty regularly?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely, yeah. It was interesting. We had a board meeting recently and was getting an update from one of our one of the folks on our staff who told us there'd been a mine risk education event. We worked a lot with elementary schools, right, junior high, primary and junior high schools to educate children who can then, one, be aware of themselves and educate their families. But they had a team go out and do a mine risk education event for an elementary school. And as the event wrapped up, a little fourth grader came over and said, I think I found something. And they went over, and sure enough, there was in the schoolyard a piece of unexploded ordnance that they then had to remove.
Well, I think that's a pretty good place to stop this part of it. And I'm going to be giving you a call back in a few minutes, and I'd like to talk about just the tours that you take with Vietnam veterans and what you found there and what their experiences are too. So is that okay? And we'll give you a call back in about 15 minutes. We'll run our outro here and go from there.
Absolutely. I'll be here.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Been listening to Is Abled with Dr. Stephen Nurse. This has been part 3 of his series on the war in Vietnam entitled A Letter is a Living Voice. To hear additional episodes, including his previous series on the Vietnam War, go to voiceofashon.org and look for Is Abled under the Shows tab.